listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up Monday at 7:30 on The Morning Show, Governor Evers is moving ahead to create a commission on redistricting in Wisconsin, while some communities are holding referendums that call for nonpartisan line drawing. Find out more Monday morning at 7:30 here on the Ideas Network. Now, September is National Suicide Prevention Awareness Month, and a new report tells us more about how suicide is affecting Wisconsinites. Produced by the Department of Health Services, Mental Health America of Wisconsin, and the Medical College of Wisconsin, it looks at the impact in the state over the last 20 years and outlines different areas of action to help prevent suicide in the years to come. That includes things like building community connections, helping healthcare groups better support people, and doing more to keep track of suicide deaths. A reminder that if you or someone you know is considering suicide, you can call the Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255. That's 1-800-273-TALK. Or text HOPELINE to 741-741. Leah Rolando is the Suicide Prevention Program Coordinator with Mental Health America of Wisconsin. Leah co-chairs Prevent Suicide Wisconsin, a statewide public-private partnership and advisory body for the Wisconsin State Suicide Prevention Plan. Leah, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, the impact portion of this report found that from 2000 to 2017, suicide deaths in Wisconsin went up 40%. That sounds pretty alarming in some ways, obviously, but can you put those numbers in context for us?
Yeah. So when you look at the report, you'll see some other key findings right at the beginning when we look at different types of populations. So I just want to make sure folks look at the report and can know that there are some different populations they can look at. But yes, the suicide rate in Wisconsin did increase by 40%, but it is also increasing nationally. So we're not that different from a lot of other states, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't be working hard to prevent suicide. So as we know, suicide is complex. Some of the reason we might be seeing increasing rates, suicide is getting reported more frequently. So when you're working with medical examiners and coroners, making sure that we're listing suicides. I know sometimes families aren't comfortable with disclosing that a death might have actually been a suicide attempt. So that's a piece of why the reporting might be getting better and the rates look like they're rising, but they are rising, and there are a variety of risk factors that go into that. And then we get into that in some of the response piece of the report. So things more than just mental health issues, when we're looking at economic issues, when we're looking at access to healthcare, oppression in general. So we know specifically Black youth suicide rates are on the rise. So we want to shift the field to actually look at these things that are impacting someone's likelihood to actually attempt suicide. And it's not necessarily just something that's caused by mental illness, like a lot of us, have been saying for such a long time.
We've got the report linked, by the way, at WPR.org/Central Time. Now, that number, that increase, obviously bad news, but in a way, there's a lot of good news in the report, in the sense that it sounds like, if I'm reading it right, there are a lot of things we know. There are a lot of things that we know work to help prevent suicide, to help people from getting to that point in the first place. There are a lot of big and small ways we can make a difference, right?
Absolutely. There are actually 50 opportunities for action in the report, in the response section, that are directly paired with resources that we can use in Wisconsin to prevent suicide. So we're working on a lot of things in all four of those strategies to make sure people in local communities know what that actually looks like on the ground. So we're hoping this is a report that can be accessible to local and tribal health departments, coalitions, healthcare systems, and just people in whatever their role is, to start doing some things to work on suicide prevention in their communities. And a lot of times the things that we're doing are suicide prevention, even if they're not ultimately called suicide prevention. We just had the annual Prevent Suicide Wisconsin conference virtually this week, actually. And one of our keynoters referenced in some Native communities, they've kind of flipped suicide prevention around and called it life promotion. So what are those things that we can do way upstream that make life worth living for specific communities? And what are the things that we can point to that actually decrease the likelihood that folks become suicidal in the first place? So there is a lot of good news in the report. There's a lot of things we can do. And you don't have to be an expert to do any of, well, you know, some of these things are clinical. And so I, you know, of course, we want some mental health professionals to be doing some of these trainings. But my point is, you don't have to be a professional to have a role in preventing suicide.
Talking to Leah Rolando, Suicide Prevention Program Coordinator with Mental Health America of Wisconsin, talking about a new report on the impact of suicide in the state and ways to provide a better mental health environment, a better community environment that helps prevent suicide and intervene before it happens. Leah, I want to pick up where you left off talking about what everyday people can do. And I want to get to one point I hear about a lot, the idea of that we're reluctant. We might be reluctant to check in with that person we know is having a hard time and even raise the idea of if they're thinking about suicide because we're worried, am I going to put that idea in their head? Am I going to like make it worse by talking to them? How can we approach a situation like that?
Yeah, that is such a good point. I think so many of us, myself included, are really afraid to approach that question, really ask someone, especially people we love. I think the closer you are to someone, the harder it can be sometimes, right? To ask them to start saying, you know, I've noticed you've been having a really hard time, or I know you have so much on your plate right now. If somebody was, you know, if somebody else was in your place, they might be thinking about suicide. They might have thoughts of, you know, death or dying. I'm wondering if you're feeling that way too. And so it's not, the words you say aren't as important as your tone and the fact that you're just sharing that you care about them, and whatever they say is not going to scare you away. You're not going to hit that panic button. You're not going to call a crisis line immediately if they tell you. The folks really just want you to be able to sit in the pain with them and hold space for them and talk about how they're feeling and give them the time to do that. So I think a lot of us could just benefit a lot from being patient with ourselves and having some grace around that fear of asking someone, because we know that's absolutely a myth. The myth is that if we ask someone about suicide, it might, you know, cause someone to consider suicide or attempt suicide. We know that's false. We know that the likelihood for someone to attempt suicide, if we ask, actually decreases. Because if I was that person who was thinking about suicide, I would know that the person asking me is okay to hear that answer.
So it's important that we talk about suicide. Something I found interesting in the report, given that I'm in the media, is talking about how we talk about suicide, the phrasing we use when talking about suicide attempts or deaths by suicide. Can you talk about a couple of better ways to talk about it that we might usually in the media or just in daily conversation?
Yeah, I love that you bring up language around suicide. And that is one of the things we are especially proud of in the report, including best practice language around suicide and suicide prevention. So what I'll say is that language is always evolving. So the table that we have in the report on page 9, who knows, in a year, maybe we'll hear from people with lived experience who say, you know, like, I don't know if that's actually the best way we should be talking about it. And we also know different cultural groups and, you know, different people prefer different language. So it's really about making sure we're using what people with lived experience want us to use. And so some examples of those, the easy one is the shift from saying committed suicide to saying died by or died of suicide. Committed implies a sin or a crime and furthers that stigma around suicide. I know a lot of folks are still saying committed because that's kind of what we grew up with. You know, we hear committed, it has a long history. So just being able to shift our language really helps decrease the stigma and increase people's ability to talk openly about this.
And then the phrase a failed attempt at suicide is kind of a really weird one when you start to think about it. What's a better way to talk about that?
Yeah, and we see failed or unsuccessful suicide attempt a lot in the literature too. A lot of professionals are still using failed suicide or unsuccessful suicide, but just in plain language, we can say a suicide attempt. They attempted suicide, because we don't want to say failed. It implies failure, lack of success. And there's actually a really gendered history there too, talking about, you know, if women attempt more, a lot of times those have been called failed attempts. And then when people talk in the literature about completions, males like completing suicide, that also has some connotations as well. So just trying to get rid of that gendered connotation, we just try to say suicide attempt, disclosed suicidal thoughts, a suicide or a suicide death. So using that report, the language table in the report is a really good start to start practicing language that decreases stigma.
We're talking with Leah Rolando right now, Suicide Prevention Program Coordinator with Mental Health America of Wisconsin, looking at ways that health professionals and everyday people can support people in need. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about suicide prevention efforts in Wisconsin? Are there changes you'd like to see? If you work in healthcare or supportive services, what's your experience been like over the years? Is it different in 2020 with everything going on? And is this an issue that's impacted you or your family? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We pick up our conversation with Leah Rolando from Mental Health America of Wisconsin, talking about suicide prevention work here in the state. You can join in with your thoughts and questions at 800-642-1234. Do you think we need to see more suicide prevention efforts, mental health care opportunities, maybe in your part of the state? Are there services you think are working well for people that you think could expand? If you are a care provider in one way or another, what do you see working out there? If your family or you have been affected by a suicide in your family, what do you want people to keep in mind when they talk about these issues? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. I want to get into a number of the, like you said, many recommendations in this report. A basic area of action here, increasing efforts that build connections to community, coworkers, faith leaders, and family and friends. Leah, can you talk about what that might look like and how it can help?
Sure. So already you listed a lot of options. We included those because suicide prevention can look a little bit different in each of those. So one example, we mentioned faith communities. We at the Prevent Suicide Wisconsin conference had a workshop on faith-based suicide prevention. So there's a lot of things that different faith communities can do to educate their congregations and the broader community about how to respond to people when they're in crisis or when they're dealing with whatever it is they might be dealing with. And so that can look like having discussion groups around this. There are also like groups in Wisconsin, in rural Wisconsin specifically. I'm thinking about also someone who just presented at the conference, Jeff Ditzenberger, who did a presentation on TUGS, getting farmers together to talk about just daily struggles in mental health and things that they're dealing with every day. So these aren't necessarily support groups, but they are areas where people can get together and feel a part of a community. There's also cultural groups, identity groups. So especially for students who are in junior high or high school, like school age students, of course, a lot are virtual now, but there are groups like Gay Straight Alliances or Black Student Unions, identity groups that can bring people together and make people feel affirmed and validated and welcomed for who they are. And so I think there's a lot of options in that strategy to prevent suicide.
Let our listeners know if they want to hear more about that TUGS program. We talked to Jeff Ditzenberger back in 2018. Really fascinating effort. Glad to hear it's still going on. Let's bring a caller on now at 800-642-1234. John is with us in Dickeyville. John, hi.
Hi. My brother suffered from multiple sclerosis for 16 years, and he took his life in 2013. When people say committed suicide, it's not a crime, it's not a sin. But I don't think it's necessarily wrong, because the way I look at it is that he committed to ending his pain. He was, he suffered for so long that he had made a commitment to stop, to stop it. And so, I mean, I look at it a little bit differently than the stigmatized version of it.
John, thanks a lot for calling and sharing that. And Leah, you said it's got a, people who have experienced this in their family may have different ways of talking about it and accept different things. But I wanted to get to something that John also brings up. His brother, he said, had MS, and you list a lot of risk factors. One of them is ongoing pain or other medical conditions. Talk a little bit about that as a risk factor.
Yeah, one of the key findings in the report is that approximately one in every four people who died by suicide had a reported physical health problem that contributed to the suicide. And so we want to make sure we're not looking at just mental health. Like I said, we need to be looking at people who have, you know, physical health problems or problems outside of just what we're, you know, diagnosing as mental health issues or mental disorders. And John, you bring up a really good perspective on that language around committed, and I appreciate you bringing that.
John, thanks a lot for sharing your story. Sorry for the loss in your family. Can you talk about some other risk factors? As you said, depression and other mental health concerns are part of it. Physical health. What are some of the other things that that might lead to thinking about suicide or attempting it?
Yeah. So the more social things like a job problem, a financial problem, or legal problem, those are all risk factors. There's a lot of data in the report on those. Some of the other risk factors include intimate partner issues. And it gets as specific as talking about, for example, one of the statistics is nearly one in every five suicide deaths occurred after a recent argument or conflict. So I think some of our interventions need to address, how we communicate with one another and how we do, you know, for example, social emotional learning in school, and things that target other issues outside of just mental health issues that are just very individually based.
Talking to Leah Rolando, Suicide Prevention Program Coordinator at Mental Health America of Wisconsin, looking at a new report on the impact of suicide in Wisconsin and the many opportunities to make a better climate for us, for our mental health, our well-being, our connections to others, and ways to hopefully bring down the rate of suicide and suicide attempts. Now, Leah, this report uses the latest available data. It's going through 2017. We're in 2020. And a lot of the positive factors, you know, those connections, those in-person meetings are harder to come by now. What kind of concerns do you and your colleagues have this year? I know the data is probably not there yet, but what are you watching for, worried about, and hoping we can fix it with?
Yeah, we are very concerned about increased isolation and loneliness. And folks who previously didn't have a support system, or maybe their support system was in person, and now that's just not available virtually. So we're trying to get creative in ways that we can offer virtual programs. One program I really want to talk about as an example of what other folks can do, at Mental Health America Wisconsin, we're trying to launch an LGBTQ peer support program so that can meet, it will be peers supporting other peers virtually. So across the state, you know, we're not limited by geography, and bringing together LGBTQ young people and talking about things like identity and mental health and things that could support them. And so that's one small example of something that we can do. And I know some of our suicide loss support groups across the state have also moved to virtual formats. We understand that does not replace in-person meetings, and there's much, much value in in-person grief support groups, but we're doing the best that we can to get creative and offer support in new ways and in some more accessible ways too. We found that being able to go virtual, people don't have the commute for one, and you're able to interact with people who might not necessarily even be in your city or town. So there are some pros. I don't want to say that, it's better to be virtual, but we're all navigating this together. And I think there are still some creative ways we can connect with each other.
Now, big picture, we've talked about some different subgroups. You mentioned people in rural communities who maybe don't have a lot of mental health access, LGBTQ youth, people in cities. You have a lot of different approaches and suggestions in this report, and it sounds like that's because there's not going to be a magic wand, one size fits all, that's going to help everybody.
Right, exactly. I think that's one of the biggest messages that I would love to see more in suicide prevention, is that suicide prevention efforts and trainings are not one size fits all. We need a variety of approaches. We need community-led approaches, even if trainings are evidence-based, evidence for which populations. They may not work for all different populations, all different ages and settings. And so we need to continue to get more creative and think about a comprehensive approach that includes a lot of different communities that suicide prevention has historically left out.
In our last minute or so, Leah, do you see positive signs where we are actually taking some of these initiatives and running with them?
I think so. I think there's a lot of hope in some of the groups that are peer-led by people with lived experience of suicide. I think the more we elevate the voices of suicide attempt survivors and people who still deal with suicidal thoughts, the more we learn about what actually works. I think groups like Alternatives to Suicide.
I think we just abruptly lost our guest. Sorry about that. We've been talking to Leah Rolando, Suicide Prevention Program Coordinator with Mental Health America of Wisconsin. She talked with us about a new report looking at the impact of suicide in Wisconsin and lots of different ways to help prevent it, either maybe just before in that crisis moment, but also building a healthier community to where people don't end up considering that attempt in the first place. You can find a link to that full report. We've got it up at WPR.org/Central Time. WPR.org/Central Time. A reminder that Suicide Prevention Lifeline, it is available 24 hours a day at 1-800-273-8255. That's 1-800-273-8255 or 1-800-273-TALK. You can also text HOPELINE to 741-741. Thanks again to our guest, Leah Rolando.